In the era of expensive care medicine, this is the antithesis.
Out of hospital cardiac arrest secondary to drug overdoses have just been skyrocketing.
The main thing that I want to convey is a word of caution.
Welcome back, everyone, to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. This is Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. As always, we hope that you are doing well, this podcast, and we are so thankful and grateful that you are listening to us here on CCPEM. We have got another discussion and another critical topic for you. As always, we like to hit hot off the press articles, and well, we've got another one for you on this podcast that pertains to cardiac arrest. Now, before we jump into our topic of this podcast, let me bring in my co-host. You know them so well. You've heard them so well. They have outstanding pearls to impart to all of us during this recording. Dr. John Greenwood, Dr. Peter W., and Dr. Rob Rodriguez. Dr. Greenwood, how are things?
Oh, thanks for asking, Mike. Things are great. I just was in Detroit, Michigan, early in the beginning of the month. And I always, Detroit's actually such an awesome city. Yeah, I walk around the city and you see all the old buildings and how beautiful they are when they were, a lot of them were built back when, Ford was just starting. But it was such a great visit. I was there for the Extracorporeal Life Support Organization annual conference, ELSO. And I was invited to talk about some of my research in microcirculation and cardiogenic shock and got to meet up with a few really good EM critical care colleagues, Cindy Hsu, who's now leading the EM critical care group at University of Michigan, Joe Tona, who is doing incredible work within ELSO and on ECPR research. He's at University of Utah. So it was a really good visit and just a wonderful time in the city of Detroit.
That is awesome to hear. Perhaps we need to do a podcast just on updates with respect to ECPR. That would be fun. All right, Dr. W. Now, as many longtime listeners know, we do touch on weather. And quite honestly, we've had two significant major events since our last recording that have impacted those that you know. And certainly our thoughts are to all those folks impacted by the recent hurricanes. How are things in your neck of the woods?
So surprisingly busy hurricane season, and we've kind of dodged. We had a glancing blow by one and then two other storms to follow that kind of ravaged Florida all the way up to western North Carolina and have friends and, family members there. And then a second storm to hit Florida. So shout out to all those people that are having to deal with that weather event and the recovery that's involved.
Completely agree. And Dr. Rodriguez, how are you this recording?
Yes, Mike, I've been in Texas recently working on a sabbatical project looking at emergency care and critical care along the U.S.-Mexico border. Been traveling quite a bit for that. And otherwise, enjoying some time back here in California as well. October's I believe it's the prettiest month out here.
All right, outstanding. Let's turn now back to the topic at hand. And you know that we do love to touch on various aspects of cardiac arrest. Let's touch on medications. Now, we have over the years downplayed, I think, the emphasis on medications with respect to cardiac arrest resuscitation, namely epinephrine, with respect to its utility within cardiac arrest resuscitation, along with antiarrhythmics over the years. However, could there be some medications we may need to think about in patients coming in with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest? And that brings us to this month's topic, specifically on naloxone. And this paper comes to us from JAMA Network Open, once again, just published online. So this is hot off the press. Lead author was Dr. Dillon. This is coming out of Northern California. And it is titled Naloxone and Patient Outcomes in Out-of-Hospital Cardiac Arrests in California. Dr. Greenwood, let me turn to you to kind of set the stage. Why are we talking about this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think all of us are acutely aware of the fact that over the past several decades, out-of-hospital cardiac arrests secondary to drug overdoses have just been skyrocketing. The incidence of opioid-associated cardiac arrest is estimated to occur between up to 7 to 14% of these cardiac arrests. And in a recent study, over 17% of EMS attended out-of-hospital arrests in San Francisco County were thought to be drug-related. So we all know that naloxone reverses opioid-induced apnea and altered mental status, right? It is also reported to review opioid-related myocardial depression, so reverse that, and stimulate catecholamine release, which in turn increases heart rate and blood pressure. So this is a great question that this paper addresses, how early and effective interventions change patient trajectory, and that we shouldn't necessarily just focus on following the guideline or the protocol or whatever, but really address what caused the primary issue and why the patient's presenting to your emergency department. So current AHA guidelines advise that clinicians consider naloxone in suspected opioid-induced out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, but do not recommend its administration routinely. Less than 25% of EMS systems in the US mention naloxone in their cardiac arrest protocols, and to date, there are no prospective studies that have assessed the efficacy of Narcan in opioid-associated out-of-hospital cardiac arrest or undifferentiated out-of-hospital cardiac arrest in general.
Outstanding, John. Really setting the table here. And I think all of us have experienced patients coming in with cardiac arrest that may be suspected opioid or substance abuse or substance use related. So, Peter, now let me turn to you. Really, what was the objective and what was this particular study?
Sure. The objective is to evaluate the association between naloxone administration and clinical outcomes for those patients with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. Specifically, the authors sought to determine whether naloxone administration was associated with increased incidence of return of spontaneous circulation, or ROSC, and whether it was also associated with improved survival to hospital discharge. A couple of the methods. It's a retrospective cohort study. These involved EMS agencies in Sacramento County, San Francisco County, and Yolo County between 2015 and 2023. So right in line with opiate epidemic. The patients who was included, these were adults greater than or equal to 18 years of age, those with non-traumatic out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, and resuscitation that was attempted by EMS clinicians. So let's look at the outcomes. The primary outcome was survival to hospital discharge. A secondary outcome included sustained ROSC. So you had sustained return of spontaneous circulation, not just a brief pulse and then gone. And then the exposure, EMS administered naloxone during out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. So you had to have received the Narcan in your resuscitation efforts by EMS. Cardiac arrest was identified as drug-related when the arrest was caused by a known or presumed overdose of legal or illegal substances. And then lastly, for exposure, determination of out-of-hospital cardiac arrest was made, opiate-induced now, was made by the treating EMS clinician. So there was suspicion there, and that's what kind of triggered all of this.
Sounds great. You set the table perfectly with respect to the message. This seems like a very applicable study that would provide us with important information. So, Dr. Greenwood, I'm going to flip back to you to give us the take-home message. What were the results? Should we be looking to administer naloxone more routinely in out-of-hospital cardiac arrest?
Yeah, so the authors did a great job. They included a little over 8,000 patients in their analysis, which is a fairly good size when we're talking about database analyses. And they found that 82% of these patients had non-shockable rhythms, a little under 20% had shockable rhythms, And in total, they estimated that opioid-associated out-of-hospital cardiac arrest occurred in 8.7% of their total patients. Now let's look at how often or how frequent naloxone was administered. In this cohort, approximately 1,100 patients, or about 14%, received naloxone at the time of their treatment for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. These patients were younger, more likely to be male, and had fewer comorbidities than those who did not receive naloxone. Now, more common in this patient group was non-shockable rhythms and unwitnessed arrest. So, with respect to the primary outcome, which was survival to hospital discharge, of the patients that received naloxone, 15.9% survived a hospital discharge, and compare that to only 9.7% in the non-exposed group. Now, when you do the math on that, the simple math is, the number needed to treat, that's 26 to get a favorable outcome. That's pretty good. When they looked at secondary outcomes or sustained ROSC in the naloxone group was almost 35%. Compare that to the non-exposed group of only 23%. That was a number needed to treat of 9. When we take a step back and actually look at this, what is this data telling us? It seems that on this database analysis, and we all understand kind of the limitations, which I know we're going to go into in a second, but in patients who receive naloxone for the out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, there seems to be a pretty favorable response here, whether or not we're talking about survival to hospital discharge, which is, hey, that is the goal, right? Versus sustained ROSC, a benefit in both groups.
Outstanding and impressive results for a few thousand patients included in this database. And overall, even for both the primary and secondary outcome, a fairly low number needed to treat to make a meaningful impact. And we think about other interventions that we have in medicine that are routine, that the number needed to treat is actually much higher, and yet it's common in everyday practice. Now, you alluded to limitations, John. So you just touched on a big one with respect to database analysis. We know this was an observational study that likely had a fair amount of selection bias in that those EMS clinicians arriving on scene, if they suspected opioid-associated out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, that younger patient, perhaps a unwitnessed arrest, probably more likely to have received naloxone in the field. And looking at a database, the authors readily acknowledge that that database didn't necessarily include information on, well, how was naloxone given? Intranasal, intravenously? What was the timing of that in relation to the overall resuscitation? And they didn't really have any ability to account if patients actually had received bystander naloxone, since that is becoming an increasingly frequent practice. I know definitely for my patient population in downtown Baltimore, we're seeing that much more frequently. And having said that, even though it was spread over several counties and many thousands of patients, it is still relatively a geographically limited study to a select portion or location in the United States. So, we always talk about generalizability, but taking all of those things into account, I think that these are fairly impressive results. And as we continue to confront substance use disorder and the opioid epidemic and coming up on patients in the out-of-hospital setting on cardiac arrest, while we downplay medications overall, it seems that perhaps we should be considering more frequent administration of naloxone. Peter, I'm going to turn to you to get your thoughts on that.
Yes, thanks, Mike. I have a couple of thoughts on this. In the era of expensive care medicine, this is the antithesis. This is a cheap administration, inexpensive, $40 pop at the most to go towards this. And I think that it shouldn't be relegated to young, what apparently healthy males, because that really skews us. There's just been some data recently published in JAMA looking at the opiate epidemic for teenagers and how we're missing the boat there and having increased deaths there. And then also, I've personally in New Orleans taken care of 70-year-olds who have injection drug use histories. And in today's day, where there is no quality control over dope and almost everything has fentanyl in it, I don't see a downside for making this part of out-of-hospital cardiac arrest routine. It sure as hell beats the numbers needed to treat compared to calcium or to bicarb, and that still is rampantly given with no level of evidence.
Awesome comments, Dr. W. Dr. Greenwood.
Yeah, those are incredible points. And I'm only going to add, a couple minor things. I think ACLS was designed and built before the opioid epidemic, right? So we need to learn how to pivot this and change a little bit. And obviously, we need more data here to support this, but I don't know how much data I need to recommend a nasal administration drug, right? That doesn't even require IV access for our EMS colleagues to just administer as you're getting set up to do all the other standard of care things. This is a somewhat of a no-brainer to me, but I encourage these authors who produce this data to continue on this path of investigation because this is some pretty compelling data to support further research and evidence building to have a pretty incredible potential impact. And Peter talked about the fact that we're seeing these opioid overdoses, it's not just IV drug abusers, right? It's pill availability. And we know that that's a major problem. And, all it can take is one mistake to alter a lifetime. So this seems something that is a pretty simple solution here. And I applaud the authors for this publication.
Well, Dr. Greenwood, I love those comments, and you mentioned applauding those authors. A voice that's been silent thus far in the discussion, turns out our very own Dr. Rodriguez was one of the authors on this particular paper, and we have been saving his expert analysis and comments here for the end. So, Rob, bring us home, summarize this, give us your thoughts, future directions, and anything additional to add to what Peter and John have said.
Yeah, Mike, I'm really glad that we are reviewing this study, this paper that we just published in JAMA Open Network. I first want to give a huge shout out to my colleagues and co-investigators, David Dillon, Juan Carlos Montoy, and Ralph Wang, who really drove this study. This study is a continuation of the line of research that we have been conducting for about 4 or 5 years now, looking at opioid-associated cardiac arrest and trying to look at the cases of occult opioid-associated cardiac arrest. We looked at that phenomenon of occult cases of opioid-associated cardiac arrest, those being cases in which there's no clear evidence of opioid use. There's no needles or no history of a witnessed overdose. And in a couple of papers that we published a few years ago in JAMA Internal Medicine and in Resuscitation, we found that there's a high level of cases in which opioids are an occult cause of cardiac arrest. And so we have been looking into this issue. And the main thing that I want to convey about this particular paper that we just published is a word of caution. This was not a prospective randomized control trial. This was a retrospective observational look at those cases. And so you can't assume causality. You cannot assume that the naloxone caused increased survival in this cohort of patients. It is truly just hypothesis generating. So I really want to, my main point of emphasis is to have people pump the brakes on this. What we're really doing is setting up for a randomized control trial of naloxone in out-of-hospital cardiac arrest. That's where our team is going on this. We, do believe that there are a lot of heavy signals that naloxone could be beneficial in cardiac arrest cases, and more specifically in patients who've had an overdose related cardiac arrest. But we, really need to do a randomized control trial. We need to do something prospectively. So that's what I really want to emphasize. We are not by any means asserting causality in terms of the increased survival with this in this paper. We cannot do that because, again, it was a retrospective study. But this study paves the way for doing a true randomized controlled trial. And as we know, there have been a lot of medications that have been, retrospectively looked at in cardiac arrest. And then when tested prospectively, they have not been shown to be a benefit. There are very, very few medications, really the main one is epinephrine, that have been shown to improve survival in cardiac arrest. So we don't really want to jump to that conclusion with naloxone. We really think this needs to be tested, and that's what we're gearing up for.
All right, outstanding discussion, gentlemen. Thanks so much for reviewing this hot off the press article. Really insightful. And we have a call. We'd like to hear from all of our EMS pre-hospital providers on your thoughts on this particular article here in JAMA Network Open. Is it adding? Is it changing your practice? Is it supporting the practice that you already do, depending on where you are seeing patients, where you're managing out-of-hospital cardiac arrest? Shoot us some replies through our website. Really want to engage and see your thoughts and interpretation of this pretty remarkable study. To that end, we're going to bring things to a close here on this particular podcast. As I mentioned when we started, we are so grateful that you are listening to us here on CCPEM, and we very much look forward to talking to you on our very next podcast. Bye for now.